Welcome to the Food for Your Soul podcast, where we apply the Word of God to the hearts of men and women to stoke the fires of your delight in Christ.
This season, D. Richard Ferguson reads his Amazon best-selling novel, Escape from Paradise, a layered parable of the Christian life. Stick around at the end to hear the author unfold the biblical basis for today's chapter and how it applies to daily life.
Chapter 25. The orchard trees flew by in a blur. Adam was determined to make the trip to the banquet hall faster than it had ever been made. And heaven help the wolf or anyone else who tried to get in his way. Sheer hatred for the orchard powered his running. Every piece of fruit he saw made him angrier. His greatest fear had always been the loss of freedom, to be held captive against his will. But this was worse. Abigail was being held captive by her will. Even if he raised an army to fight the little ones, what could be done about the chains of her own desires? In that moment, Adam knew there was only one hope for Abigail, and, for that matter, for himself. He must find the ruler. When Adam reached the grasslands, he could already see the cottage, exploding with colors. The wind at his back seemed to carry him. Blue mist covered his legs. Streaking through the valley, his feet hardly touched the ground. Once across the river, Adam dragged his raft into the boathouse.
"Where is my sister?"
Adam let go of the boat and turned. Watson stood in the doorway, fists clenched.
"She's in the orchard with Alexander. I came as fast as I could."
He stepped closer.
"Watson, I tried to bring her back here. But she wouldn't."
Watson turned white. From outside, Kalen's voice rang out.
"Watson!"
Both men stepped from the doorway to meet Kalen and Laith, who had been running. Kalen spoke between gasps.
"We have to hurry. Abigail's in trouble. We don't have much."
She noticed Adam.
"Adam, you're not with Abigail?"
Watson answered for him in a low, grave tone.
"She has been taken."
"Oh, no."
She turned her face away, sobbing.
"No, no, no."
"What did you mean when you said we need to hurry?" Adam asked. Laith answered.
"We visited the map room. Destruction is coming. Soon. Sooner than any of us thought."
"Not years or months," Kalen added. "Days."
"Destruction?" Adam asked. "What?"
"The city will fall," Kalen said, "and no prisoners will survive the battle. We have to get to Abigail before it's too late. If it isn't already."
"The prisoners?" Adam said. "What prisoners? And why won't they survive?"
"The king of the lowlands captures people by feeding their Judas desires until they love the lowlands more than the ruler," Watson said. "When the ruler comes in judgment, he will offer them amnesty. But all who are enslaved by Judas' desires will reject it and will be destroyed."
"And you think Abigail is..." He turned to Kalen. She bowed her head.
"Well, then, let's go," Adam said. "We have to..."
"No," said Laith. "We'll go. You're not equipped."
The others agreed. Adam surprised himself when he didn't argue. As much as he wanted to help rescue Abigail, his desire to meet the ruler was even greater. When he saw the change in Abigail, something changed in him. Desperation? More than that. It was like the morning sun had broken the horizon on the world, the real world. Values came into focus. He was beginning to see what mattered and what didn't. "Please hurry," he said. "Bring her back." Then he turned and started up the west side of the canyon toward the cottage. The wind still at his back, Adam scaled the steep side like a mountain goat. As he approached the banquet hall, he felt like a child on Christmas in his excitement to meet the ruler and to see the people again. The whole time in the lowlands with Abigail, thoughts of the family warmth he'd seen at the banquet stayed with him, tugging at his best desires. He pushed through the door and chose a table near the back.
A server placed a full tray of food before him and smiled.
Enjoy.
Adam didn't recognize anything on the tray. He pushed his fork into a morsel and lifted it to his nose. He inhaled slightly, then returned it to the plate. He surveyed the surrounding tables. There were even fewer people eating than last time. His stomach tightened, and he took a deep breath to suppress rising feelings of panic. What if I still can't taste it? He eyed his plate, as if staring down an adversary. Then, a hunger pang. It was a strange sensation. A pure, wholesome desire. Powerful, yet no threat to his self-control. He sipped a spoonful of soup. It wasn't sweet, nothing like fruit, but did he taste something? Another spoonful. Yes, yes, I think I taste it. He bit into a roll. Nothing. Some potatoes. No flavor at all. He chewed a bite of steak. Delicious! He devoured that piece and started another. After several more bites, he pushed his plate away and braced for a wave of nausea. Instead, a wave of happiness swept over him. He pulled the plate back and wolfed down another piece of meat. He felt 10 years younger. He stabbed a morsel of beef and held it up, turning his fork. This can't be real. Enjoying yourself? Adam looked up to see Tiki, just as a bit of gravy ran down his chin and dropped on a pile of crumbs surrounding his plate. He couldn't suppress a grin, realizing he must have looked like a wild animal devouring its prey. Tiki chuckled and took a seat across from him. He sensed her slight frame was a contrast with her true strength, and that wisdom and experience lay beneath her graying hair. Moments later, Hodia approached the table. Tiki welcomed her with a warm smile. Have a seat. Adam hoped the women wouldn't ask him why he had left last time, or where he had been since. When the ladies got their food, Adam resumed eating. The more he ate, the better it tasted. He wanted to share his joy, but thought it would sound strange that he was excited about something that was so routine for them. Adam pointed to what looked like a pile of string on Tiki's plate. What is that? It smells amazing.
It's called lasagna, and it tastes as good as it smells. Here, try it.
She scooped a portion from her plate to Adam's, then started in on her meal with obvious delight. After several ravenous bites, Tiki raised her eyes to Hodia, set down her fork, and let out a sigh.
What's wrong, Hodia? Aren't you hungry?
Guess who I ran into the other day?
Tiki raised her eyebrows, prompting Hodia to continue.
Abigail! And guess what she was doing?
Tiki broke eye contact and looked back to her plate. Hodia continued anyway.
Eating grapes!
Tiki looked startled for a split second, but didn't lift her face. She slowly turned some pasta on her fork. Adam lost his appetite. If Hodia saw Abigail eat the grape, she knew Abigail had been with him at the time. He looked at Hodia, ready to give an explanation, but she would not meet his gaze. She shook her head.
Such a disgrace!
Tiki shifted in her chair and looked around. She lowered her voice.
I think the person you should be talking to is Abigail, not us.
Hodia ignored the remark.
It's just so disappointing. Hodia, stop!
Tiki looked straight at her.
If you haven't even talked to Abigail, I don't want to hear about it.
Hodia's lips tightened. Adam wasn't sure if the redness in her cheeks showed embarrassment or anger.
I was simply going to ask your advice on how to handle it. I thought I could come to you as a friend. I guess I was wrong.
Hodia stood and left the hall. Tiki put a hand to her face, then drew it away, her fingers dripping with blood. Adam had noticed Hodia's claw-shaped fingernails, but never saw her touch Tiki. Another woman sat next to Tiki and pointed to her laceration.
What happened? I don't know. I was talking with Hodia, and she just went off on me for no reason. She can be like that, the woman said.
Tiki nodded.
She thinks she's so much better than everyone.
As the women spoke, Adam's attention fell to their hands. In just the few moments since Hodia had drawn blood from Tiki's face, Tiki had grown claws like Hodia's. Adam stood, taking his plate, and was glad when the women didn't seem to notice. Perhaps things would be different at a table where people were eating. As he searched, he saw something that almost made him drop his food.
Levi? Adam, you came back!
Levi wiped his mouth with his sleeve and stood to shake Adam's hand.
It's great to see you!
Adam didn't take his hand.
You're alive!
Levi smiled and spread his arms.
Good as new! Once I got a few of these meals under my belt, my injuries healed right up.
No, that's not what I mean. Adam lowered his voice.
Levi, I saw your body in the lowlands. You looked like your heart had been ripped out. I know it was you.
Yeah, I know, Levi said, retaking his seat.
That's the old me. When I went through the cottage, the old Levi died.
He buttered a roll.
And good riddance.
Levi had been stacking his used plates in the space next to him. He pushed the pile toward the center of the table and motioned for Adam to sit. Adam didn't move.
What's wrong, buddy? You look kind of rattled, Levi said.
Oh, you haven't been through the cottage yet, huh?
Adam took a seat. No, not yet. I came here to meet the ruler first.
Good idea. That's how it was for me, too. The last time, the ruler came out right after you left. I was so blown away, I could hardly talk. Then he and I went down to the cottage, and
just the two of you?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. He came right over to our table and invited me.
What was it like in there?
Oh, man, I can't even describe it. You need to see it for yourself.
Did you get a new name?
Sure did. And empowerment, too. The gift of faith. He made it so trusting him comes easy to me.
It wouldn't really have been my first choice for a weapon, but he promised me I'll use it. I have no idea how, but I figure he knows what he's doing. A deafening roar halted their conversation and brought all who were eating to their feet. The sound of the mighty wind filled the banquet hall. Levi leaned close and shouted over the roar.
This is the best part of the meal. In fact, I think it's the whole point of the meal. The mighty wind always blows first. The stronger the wind, the more spectacular the ruler's appearance.
Men with trumpets, French horns, and ram's horns lined every wall, and the rumble from dozens of timpani drums from the balcony shook Adam's chest. Cheers erupted, but were nearly drowned out by the crescendo of the instrumental fanfare. A deafening voice rang out from above.
Ladies and gentlemen, the ruler of the kings of the earth!
The great doors from the kitchen burst open, and light shot out like sparks from an anvil, flooding the hall, and, it seemed, the entire high country. The hall erupted with thunderous applause, cheers, and joyful laughter. The ruler's face shone like the sun. Adam couldn't look directly at him, and his first impulse was to duck behind something. But at the same time, the ruler's countenance warmed parts of Adam's soul that he now realized had been cold from the day he was born. The light seemed at once life-threatening and life-giving, deadly and essential. The light subsided, and Adam saw the ruler's face. His knees buckled, and he found himself on the floor along with Levi and most of the others around him. Adam had many times been amazed, but never in awe. Not like this. He had felt belittled by those who outshined him in degrees, but never dwarfed by true greatness. Rather than embarrassing him, it drew him in, drew him to not only see the glory, but to participate in it. Adam had never felt smaller, but it was an exhilarating smallness, like one standing before a massive, thunderous waterfall that would crush him if he got too close, but that was so majestic that merely watching it fortified and expanded his soul. He realized now that he had been born with a need to be awed. He was like a child who didn't know he was thirsty until the first time he drank.
Did you notice his hair? Levi asked. The ruler looked to be in the prime of life, and yet with white hair and a gray beard. Levi turned to a server standing with them at the table.
Tell Adam what you told me about the hair.
It points to his existence from ancient times, said the server, and to his comprehensive wisdom. He's the oldest being in existence, and has witnessed, understood, and remembered every event, stretching back to the very womb of time, comprehending the purpose and meaning of all things. He knows every heart, every motive, every thought, every impulse, every appetite, and can be trusted as a guide to always point his people to the best possible course.
And his legs? Adam asked. They look like they're solid bronze. The server nodded.
Powerful, immovable, utterly and eternally stable.
The ruler's fiery eyes penetrated to the secrets of Adam's soul. His voice shook the hall. He spoke with awesome authority, perfect clarity, and ultimate finality.
And check out his sword, Levi said, pointing to the blade secured at the ruler's hip.
With that sword, said the server, he will crush all his enemies in perfect justice, spotless purity, and overwhelming glory. He holds in his hands the destiny of every person in existence. He is at once the best friend and the worst enemy anyone could have.
As the server spoke, awe expanded in Adam like a starburst with rays touching every corner of his soul. In the ruler's presence, he felt thoroughly known and understood. He also felt dirty. The ruler's goodness awakened him to a darkness within him, a darkness utterly incompatible with the ruler's goodness. And yet, he didn't feel repelled. Just the opposite. He sensed it would be possible to be at peace with the ruler, though he couldn't imagine how. And while Abigail had been his tether to the good, the ruler now attracted him to the good with irresistible glory. Adam's awe gave way to surprise when he saw what the ruler was wearing.
Is that an apron? Levi smiled. Isn't it amazing? He's the great ruler of the kings of the earth, and yet he serves every week as our chef.
Adam scanned Levi's face, trying to discern if he was serious.
The ruler is the chef? It's true. He says serving as chef is an essential part of his work as ruler because his food is the only source of life. Fruit brings death and misery, and so the only law in the high country is that we must prefer his life-giving delicacies over fruit.
That's the only law?
Yeah, you can do anything you want as long as you prefer real food over the garbage in the lowlands. He says that's the only law because it's the supreme way to honor him, and because it does most good for society and for yourself.
After removing his apron, the ruler spoke, controlling his thunderous voice with gentleness and compassion that set Adam's troubled heart at ease. Still, the ruler's voice rattled Adam's body.
I am the beginning and the end. I am and have always been. And I will always be. Why do the powers rage? Will the king of the lowlands take a stand against me? I will crush him, the powers, and their people to powder on the day of judgment. But those who lay down their arms and come to me will be given full pardon. I am a shepherd. I gather the lambs in my arms and carry them close to my heart. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Learn from me, for I am humble and gentle in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. Blessed are those who eat at my table.
As he spoke, some fell on their knees and then on their faces, trembling in awe. Others stood like soldiers at attention, displaying profound respect and honor.
Others sat in chairs in deep contemplation. As the ruler finished speaking, the best aromas yet wafted from the kitchen.
"Ah," said the ruler, "the pies are ready. Enjoy, everyone."
Before the words were out of his mouth, the servers moved toward the kitchen to bring out the desserts. The ruler picked up his apron, but instead of returning to the kitchen, he approached Adam's table.
"Welcome, Adam. I have so looked forward to meeting you."
Adam opened his mouth, but could generate no reply. His commingled joy and awe silenced him. Others had embraced the ruler. Adam wanted to, but instead he fell again to his knees. The ruler extended his hand and lifted Adam to his feet.
"Come, I would like you to join me in my cottage."
Adam lost his breath. From his first day in this world, he had known the cottage was important, more important than anything else. Most of his life, he had suppressed that knowledge, but it had always lingered in his soul. In his quest to see it, he had forsaken everything, faced giants, stepped over dead bodies, fought wolves, and gained and lost the most remarkable woman he'd ever known. And now, after everything, he was about to see it. Chills ran through every nerve in his body.
What does it mean when Scripture says God carries his lambs close to his heart? It says that in Isaiah 40:10. And in Matthew 11:28, Jesus said something similar. He said, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls." How might you experience that in practical terms in your life? Well, God carrying you close to his heart means God protects you and cares for you with tenderness and gentleness. And when our strength or ability runs out, he takes over. That's the point of the carrying. The lambs walk when they can, but when it gets too much, the shepherd picks them up, carries them with great affection and warmth. That's the picture. In times when following God's way is too difficult, God provides spiritual strength, motivation, and security that encourages and enables us to continue. There have been times when I've felt overwhelmed or afraid or depressed, and I turned my attention to drawing near to God. I focused on several of his attributes and sought ways to experience them, and when I did that, I found strength, security, and joy. That's what the passage means. Think back over the last several days. Could it be there were moments when your shepherd carried you in a special way, close to his heart, or gently led you because he knew you needed extra care, but it never even occurred to you that that's what was happening? You were oblivious to it. What about your upcoming day? Could you prepare yourself now to be ready so that the next time God deals with you in a gentle way or carries you through something hard, you'll be aware of it so you can respond to him appropriately? Thank you, Father, for all those times you've carried me close to your heart or led me with special gentleness when I was fragile or vulnerable. How many times has that happened? And I just imagined it was because of my own strength or fortitude. Please, Father, by your Spirit, enable me to be aware next time. When you're expressing your amazing love toward me, I want to feel it. Don't let me be oblivious to it, Lord. What good is your comfort if I don't realize it's coming from you? I'm sure I feel a little better, but it doesn't help me love you more. So let me feel it. You said, "Comfort, comfort my people. Speak tenderly to them and proclaim to them that their hard service has been completed and that her sin has been paid for." How much more this applies to your people now than it did for ancient Israel. now that the glory of the Lord has been revealed and all nations have seen it? All men are like grass, and their glory is like the flowers of the field. The grass withers and the flowers fall, but the word of the Lord stands forever. You, sovereign Lord, will come with power, and your reward is with you. You tend your flock like a shepherd. You gather the lambs in your arms and carry them close to your heart. You gently lead those who have young. Who's measured the waters in the hollow of his hand, or with the breadth of his hand marked off the heavens? Who's held the dust of the earth in a basket, or weighed the mountains on the scales and the hills in a balance? Who has understood your mind, Lord, or instructed you as your counselor? Surely the nations are like a drop in the bucket. They're regarded as dust on the scales. You weigh the islands as though they were fine dust. To whom then will I compare you, God? You sit enthroned above the circle of the earth, and all its people are like grasshoppers. You stretch out the heavens like a tent. You bring princes to naught and reduce the rulers of this world to nothing. No sooner are they planted, no sooner are they sown, no sooner do they take root in the ground, than you blow on them and they wither, and a whirlwind sweeps them away like chaff. Lift your eyes and look to the heavens. Who created all these? He who brings out the starry host one by one and calls them each by name. Because of your great power and mighty strength, Lord, not one of them is missing. Why do you complain, O my soul, as if your way is hidden from the Lord, your cause disregarded by your God? Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary, and his understanding no one can fathom. Father, you give strength to the weary and increase the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in you will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint.
Thanks for listening. To get your copy of the study guide, just go to drichardferguson.com. This podcast and hundreds of other resources are free to everyone because of the generosity of those of you who support this ministry. If you would like to help with a tax-deductible gift, our Venmo is at Food for Your Soul. Be careful, it's not food for the soul, it's food for your soul.
Until next time, may the Lord make his face shine upon you and give you peace.